souls coming to sort out their karma with me, all of that. But I maintain my inner state of contentment. So that's a very powerful signal.
Mm-hmm.
Sakar Muralis keep giving us very powerful signals. And the signal from the Sakar Muralis that I'm picking up is soul consciousness, soul consciousness, soul consciousness. Baba reminding us of that again and again. And the third way that we are now getting signals is through the trans messengers. There was a period of time when with Dadi Gulzar going into silence, we weren't getting Baba's messages in that way. But since earlier, I think it was mid 2019, the messages started coming and Madhavan decided to circulate them everywhere. And so we are now getting the trans messengers. And the ones that I've seen so far have all spoken about silence. So these are three powerful signals we're getting about what I need to focus my attention on in terms of what Baba expects me to do at this moment of time. The silence, the soul consciousness, and thirdly, the state of contentment.
Someone's asking a question, you know, what if we make a mistake? The mind's in regret and it wants to go back and maybe justify why we did it or replay it, you know, it's almost if it didn't happen. So it's almost like we want to change the past. And I think sometimes when we make a mistake, it's a shock because how we normally operate is a certain way, and suddenly maybe a sanskara emerges and we act in a way that we don't even recognize ourselves. And so there's a regret because we know that it's not how Baba would want us to act. And so the mind keeps going back to that with a pull back because of the mistake. So I don't know if you've ever had an experience of that. And how did you move on?
Definitely, I've had experiences of that. And I've had to come to terms with it in this way, that there was some karmic account that came that had to be settled. And so, okay, it's happened. Was I able to be honest with Baba, with Dadi? And what did I learn from that? And have I moved on? Have I been able to make such effort that I can cover up whatever, I don't mean cover up in a sense of hiding, but to make up that sense of lost time. And so one mistake and a huge amount of time was wasted in sorting it out. But can I today say, okay, now I've been able to make up that loss. And can I move forward today? Mm. Because Sangam Yug isn't a time for regret. If I just spent my time in regret, I'm not able to use the time I have today in a fruitful way, in a worthwhile way. But if I can say it happened, I learned lessons from it, and now full stop, I'm going to move on holding Baba's hand of Srimath. Baba will help.
Mm. Do you think things have their time? For example, we may have a certain sanskara that we make effort to transform. We might do extra yoga. We might write about it. We might do lots of things. But it's almost like it has a certain time because we don't know when in the cycle that began. And so I just wonder sometimes there's a point where it's like you've done your time, if you know what I mean, and then it finishes. Have you had experience of that? Or there's a relationship that was challenging and maybe you made a different kind of effort and suddenly it's over?
There is a time to begin things and a time to end things. I believe that absolutely. But I can't wait for time. Say, for example, there's a challenging relationship. I can't say, well, it'll finish with time. What am I going through at this moment? What is my response to that individual? Am I doing it with the consciousness of how Baba wants me to deal with this and finish it? And it isn't finishing, but I'm making that effort and that awareness. to do things in the way Baba wants me to. And then a fine day comes when I look around and it's dissolved, it's gone. And I hadn't been caught up in it, but I had been continuing to make my effort. And so not to wait for time, but yes, I do think that everything has a span. And so it comes and it consumes you and then it gradually leaves you. But whatever it is you're going through, my spiritual effort of Amrit Vela, Murali, all of these things, if I keep up with those, it'll bring that time closer and it'll make things finish faster.
Sure. Actually, someone asked the question about Amrit Vela, like who chose the time? Because, you know, in terms of the world, it's like people say that we're crazy getting up at that sort of time, you know, 3 a.m, 4 a.m. So how did Amrit Vela come about? Because when you hear the daddies, they say that in the beginning there wasn't Amrit Vela.
It was very individual. Mama, in the early days in Karachi, used to sit in the garden in Kunj Bhavan at 2:30, 3 a.m. in the morning. And some people would see that and would want to be with her and follow her in that. But no, it wasn't part of a prescription in a sense. That prescribed thing came much, much later. In particular, I'm not sure what they did in the days of Abu when they first came there, but I do know that as soon as service started, Baba's instruction to them was start the day with Amrit Vela. So, because Baba knew that being out there, they were going to have many challenges. And so it was important for them to have that collective yoga in a center to protect themselves, to protect the center, to keep the atmosphere of Baba's home powerful. So I know that togetherness in yoga happened at that time. And of course, then even later, Baba would say that everybody at the center should sit together, not even in different places. And it was Shiv Baba who prescribed the time of Amrit Vela as 4 o'clock. Earlier, it could be 3 o'clock, 3:30, whatever. But then Baba said, if you want to have full day's activity, if you're going to be up at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock, you're going to need a break in the afternoon. And some people still take a break in the afternoon, even though it's 3:30 or 4, and that's fine. But Baba said, if you're going to be out there working, then if you begin your day with 4 o'clock yoga, you'll be able to manage things till the night. Otherwise, you won't be able to manage. Very few people can go to bed at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock and still be up as a regular thing at 2:30 and 3. So Baba wasn't teaching Hatha yoga on any level, but certainly that time pre-dawn, not just the time of dawn, and anyway, in a place like England or Iceland, the time of dawn changes so drastically. When you're near the equator in India, there's half an hour time difference in terms of the setting of the sun and the rising of the sun. At least that's been my perception. Maybe it's a bit longer than that, but you know, winter time, summer time, just about half an hour difference. But just imagine the land of the midnight sun. At what time are they going to have Amrit Vela? But Baba prescribed Amrit Vela as 4 o'clock, 4 to 4:45, 5 o'clock, whatever is comfortable. I remember being in San Francisco with Daddy, and it was, I think, the Langley Porter Institute, if I'm not mistaken, but one of those big scientific institutes there. And they wanted to do experiments with Daddy and the way her brain waves work and so on. And so then they were also chatting in between with myself and Denise Ben. She was there. And one of the questions they asked was, what time do you wake up? And we told them. And they said, it's interesting because that seems to be the time when the gravitational pull between the earth and other celestial bodies seems to be at its lowest. And so it's very easy for the soul to detach from the body. And they said, if you look at hospital records, most people who were ready to leave believe in that period of the early morning hours, and you're not wanting to leave the body in that way, but certainly it's easier for you to detach from the body at that time. So that was an interesting bit of Lockic information.
We're doing our own kind of dying. So someone is asking, actually, because, you know, like you've had quite a span of the late 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, so on. Have you got a favourite time period? It's like when you ask mothers, what was the favourite time? Like, oh, when the children were little. Do you have a favourite time of your Brahman life? And you look back and think, oh, I love that time.
The first period being with Baba was absolute honeymoon. It really was just understanding Gyan, coming to Baba, Baba accepting my desire to surrender, Baba's drishti making me fly. And then there were a few challenges with people saying, no, 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 you shouldn't surrender, things like this. But I was in no mood to listen to them. And then that first period in Agra, that was very special, with Baba sending letters 3 times a day, not to me personally, but to the center. But of course, then Baba would mention what I needed to do in terms of service also, and sometimes letters specifically to me about Baba wanting me to go here, wanting me to go there, and doing this and that. That was a very, very intoxicating, a real honeymoon period. Mm. And then the time that Daddy Janki came to London, that period from April 74 was extremely challenging, new situations, adjusting in so many different ways, but it was high adrenaline. It really was, because every day there would be something new happening. Baba's children finding their way to this tiny little flat in Tennyson Road. It was really very intoxicating, that whole period. So it was, I can see how through the years there have been many, many periods in which there's been very high level of intoxication. And so that was one of those periods. Other periods after that also. But Dadi in London was magic. Mm. It had been something that I had wanted, but I had never actually expected that it could happen, because Dadi's health was so fragile. And so to think about her traveling and coming here was in a way not humanly possible. And Baba made it happen.
Mm. What about the current time, you know, this? So many things on Zoom, and you know, every moment that you're used, your time is kind of used a lot, isn't it? do you feel that your time has been used in a worthwhile way? Is there a kind of special feeling about this time?
Oh, absolutely. It's every moment is being used very well. Mm. And yes, I think that since Daddy passed away, I think it's now 9 months already. And this whole period has been one in which it feels as if on the one side it's COVID, but on the other side, it feels as if Dadi is working from the subtle region. I know whatever her new role is happening, but yet, even though that role is happening here, but on that level, Dadi is working from the subtle dimension in a very powerful way. And new things keep happening in terms of service and developments in the Brahman family. So this is a very exciting period, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. So someone's asking, you know, there's a little bit of mystery around time, and Two Souls have said that, you know, time, there's sometimes a feeling that time stands still, you know, and, you know, do you have an experience to share where you felt that time stood still?
My first experience of that, and it's not been the only one, but was when Sakar Baba gave me drishti, and I forgot about this world completely, and Baba's drishti pulled me to Paramdham, And in that space of light and purity and peace, meeting God, that was a moment when I was totally beyond time in a different dimension. So yes, and it's, and just looking back, I think those moments of drishti, not just with Sakar Baba, but afterwards with Avyak Bab Dada, just think about how, you know, when people would come in a line in front of Baba and just take drishti. And in terms of the clock, it would be how long? 30 seconds? But that moment in which you were receiving Baba's drishti, you were beyond time. And it's impossible to say it was only 30 seconds. It was like an infinite moment. And so drishti gives you that experience, because drishti carries you into another realm, which is beyond time. Mm-hmm. And so very often with drishti, and as I say, yes, with Sakar Baba, with the Avyak Bab Dada, but also with the Dadis, many of the Dadis, and Didi Manmohini, when she gave you drishti, she herself was so focused and so concentrated and engaged in God's love that she held you in that. And again, you think it was a long, long time that she gave me drishti. And then you look at your watch and you say, it wasn't that long. So yes, the drishti carries you beyond this physical dimension. And so it is a timeless moment.
Mm. Yeah, someone has actually asked a question about soul world. Let's see if I can find it. Someone's saying that, you know, that because the soul world is beyond time, that, you know, is it that even though we're there for what would seem a little time, a lot of time could pass here? I think that's what they're asking. They're saying in one Indian sacred book, it says, once a king went to visit Brahmalok, when he returned back to earth, he realized many generations had passed by. So there's a feeling when you go to the soul world that you are in a completely different dimension. It's so different. And I don't know if you want to explain more about that.
I think there's many stories in the Indian scriptures which are being have to be taken as a metaphor and not necessarily reality. In the sense that, say, for example, now in meditation, I have that experience of, without drishti or anything, just through meditation, being able to be in the home and you don't know how long you're there. There's no way to calculate time. And so just to be in that space of silence and stillness and no vibration, not even the vibration of time ticking on any level. And so I think it's actually quite short. But coming back here in the physical dimension, no, actually it's the other way around. When I'm there, because it's an infinite moment, I don't feel that it's short. I feel that it's very long. But when I come back here, now, at this moment in Sangam Yuga, it is actually quite short. It's not been very long. So I think, different to the experience of the king, I find that it's the other way around. And so it's not that I've been out of the physical dimension for a long time, but the experience there is a bit deep and very satisfying. You know, it's like going deep, deep, deep into the self, and you don't know how long that takes. And it feels as if it might be in a very long time, but it's not.
Seems like in the soul world, we, in a way, we can have yoga with our perfection. In the subtle region, we've got our perfect form, and we've also got the golden age perfect form. So we've got three dimensions where we can experience our perfection. So you wonder why we ever stay down here. But have you got, do you feel that your where do you spend most of your time? The soul world, the subtle region, the golden age? Because there's much more about the golden age now, isn't there? And experiencing the golden age in the last, definitely in the last year, 2 years. So where do you put your energy?
The easiest place for me to be is the subtle region. I actually don't think too much about the golden age yet. Maybe it's an indication that it's still a bit far away for me. But yes, when we talk about it, I'm happy to, you know, be part of that conversation. But on my own, I don't often get carried to the golden age, but the subtle region very often. I mean, just Thursdays, every Thursday when the Bhog song plays, Shiv Bhola Bhagwan, that particular one, the scene of Madhupan and Brahma Baba giving drishti comes in front of me. And then it's as if instead of Sakar Baba, it becomes Avyakt Baba, Avyakt Brahma in the subtle region. And Thursday is the gateway to the subtle region, offering Bhog. And it can happen at other times also, offering Bhog especially, because you don't offer Bhog here. You know, is Shiv Baba going to come here and eat the food? Brahma Baba's up there. Where is he going to come and eat? But the offering of Bhog is a lovely opportunity to ascend and be in the subtle region with Baba, and not just Bhog, but at other times also to feel that experience of the subtle region is a very easy thing for me to feel. Paramdham, yes, when I'm deeply in yoga and really just the soul and God incorporeal, then the experience of Paramdham. But the easiest place to go to is the place of love and fun and games, the subtle dimension.
Okay, actually there's quite a few questions about the golden age, and you said you don't, but let's see, because actually you might remember what Daddy Gulzar talked about. Some people are saying, when's it going to come?
When we're ready.
We all want to know, when's it going to come?
This is why Baba hasn't given us a date. Baba's telling us to give him a date.
some are saying that they know that in Satu there must be a different concept of time. So do we mark any event, you know, do we, like, obviously not birthdays, but is there sort of festivals or anything that marks event? Do we know how old we are? Do we know, you know, do we know that we're going to live for a long time? So these sort of questions, you know, because Baba says that no one is ever a widow. So do the couples leave the same time? I don't know what your thoughts are on all this.
There's a few things that are very, very clear. And Baba said that the day that they will mark each year in the golden age is the coronation day of Lakshmi and Narayan. And so the day that the kingdom begins officially, that will be a day that is remembered and honored every year. And then the thing about widows, yes, in India especially, widows have a hard time because they haven't had any education often. They don't have their own job, no finances. And then within the combined family, the extended family unit, the brother-in-law or somebody else in the family, the matriarch of the family, takes over and controls. And so widows are given a very, very hard time in India, or used to at least. There's things a little bit different today. And Baba said that that will never happen. There will never be any widows in Satyu, because Baba's aware of the situation where there's such sorrow. And so there, Baba, it means that the woman will go earlier than the male, but probably it'll be very short span of time before, you know, by the time the other one goes, it won't be long in which there's any experience of loneliness or anything. I've seen here at this time, not just Sangam Yug, but Kali Yug, where there have been two people who've been very closely connected over a long period of time. Very often, when one leaves, the other one also leaves very soon. So I think in Satyug, that will be the natural pattern. The woman will go and the man will go. Time to go. And I think there's no need for clocks there. Dadi Janki, not only did she not have a watch that she ever wore, people would give her watches and she'd give them away. She used to look at the clock, but she would know when it's traffic control time. In the days that we used to have 10:30, 12:30, 5:30, now it's easier for everyone to know. It must be an hour already, something like that, you know. But in the days that it used to be very other specific times, she would suddenly say, "Is it traffic control?" And then we were out somewhere, so it's not that the music was about to come on or anything. And we'd say, "Yes, Daddy, it's nearly 10:30. Then she'd say, "Okay, let's stop and have traffic control." And so there was an inner mechanism which guided her. So I think that with Satyug, and this is just a person here, but in Satyug, everybody would have a inner tuning fork in which they'll be able to pick up and resonate with time and do things at the right time, in the right way, just simply through that resonance. And so that connection with time, with other souls, so that when you connect with each other, you know that, well, let's go for dinner now. You don't have to phone or call them or anything, but your thought will reach them and off you go. Mm. Or it's time to go for a picnic now.
Mm. Thank you. I mean, that's a whole nother topic, isn't it, of the relationship between thoughts and time. And yeah. pure thoughts and time and impure thoughts and time. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
I love what Baba's told us about the fact that it's something that's been described in the scriptures. God had a thought, and that thought made him present in the world, and he came to help the world. So that's the idea that's put across in the scriptures, and the way Baba explains it is exactly that. The thought came for me to come down and share and purify and love and give and all the other things that God has been doing. And so as soon as the thought came, it became practical. And so the difference between impure thinking and pure thinking is this. The pure thought gets manifest very quickly in practical form. And impure thoughts, or rather I should say an impure soul creating thought, doesn't have that capacity to make it take practical shape immediately. The thought may come and it may take years before it's fulfilled. But a powerful soul, a pure soul, the thought comes and it happens. And again, we see that with the Dadis, not just Dadi Janki, but Dadi Prakashmani. She would have the thought, everybody would cooperate and things would happen. You know, when she had that thought, it would have been at the beginning of the 21st century, the year 2000, somewhere around there. I think it was like that. And she had a thought in January, end of January, that too, not early January, end of January. Is it possible for us to have a gathering of 100,000 people? And up until then, the biggest numbers that we'd ever had for anything had been like 50,000, around that mark, you know, 30, 40, 50,000, and that's it. And suddenly, that is upping the game and saying, can we have a program for 100,000 people? And within 2 weeks, literally before Shivratri, by February the 14th or 15th, Sarla Didi in Ahmedabad organized a program for 100,000 people. Mm. It happened just within the space of 2 weeks. So pure souls, powerful souls, their thoughts take practical shape. And another person might be scratching their heads trying to get together 100 people, and they're still scratching their heads a few years later. So the power of pure souls allows them to create thought that manifests very fast.
Mm. It sounds like, souls want to give their time to a soul that's having pure thoughts, will cooperate with that pure thought. They want to give their time. I wonder if you have any kind of personal stories, actually, when you knew it was time to act. You know, that maybe certain things happen and you knew this is the time to, I've just got to act right now. Do you have any stories of that?
Oh, several times. There's the story of coming back to London, 1974, and it was Baba giving me that instruction, you have to go back with Daddy Janki. And until Baba said it, I'd been saying no, 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 no. And then when Baba said it to me, I couldn't say no anymore. I had to say yes. And so I had to take that step. And once I'd said yes to Baba, everything happened within a few days. I mean, literally within a few days, we were able to arrange for Daddy's visa. Daddy's passport had already been done, with the ticket and everything, and we left and came to London. And so it was time to act, time to put things into motion. Mm. Yeah.
I remember you told a story once, but I'm happy to hear it again. Something about when you were on the road. I don't know if you were going from where you were going, whether it's from Madaban to Ahmedabad. I can't remember, but there was an accident. Do you remember this? And you had to act.
Yeah. Yes.
I'd like to share that story because not everyone's heard that story.
It was actually that same year, 1974, and it was in the month of January, because it was a Kumbh Mela happening at Haridwar. And I had gone with Didi Manmohini from Delhi. I was in Delhi helping to prepare the pictures, the practical Raj Yoga or Raj Yoga illustrations. That's right. It was called the Book of Raj Yoga Illustrations. Little book. And it was Jagdish Pai who was doing most of the thinking, but I was helping him. So I was in Delhi for a space of time doing all of that. And now Didi said to me, come to the Kumbh Mela. So I went along with Didi. And she was going to stay several days, but I had permission from Jagdish Pai to stay just one night. So next morning, Daddy Gulzar and Gopal Bhai and a Kumari were coming back to Delhi anyway. And so we planned it like that, that I would come back with them. And so we left Haridwar early in the morning, and like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, something like that. And by 6 o'clock, we were in Gurgaon, actually, the same place where we now have the retreat center, in that sort of area, but still about an hour away from Delhi. And the road was completely clear. I could, I was sitting in the back, Gopal Bhai, the driver, and Dadi on one side and the Kumari on the other. I was in the middle. And so you could see the road ahead very, very clearly. But it was like, the breaking of the dawn. It was a little bit soft light. And in the distance, very clear, straight road, in the distance, this old man, and he was dithering whether to cross or not to cross. And the car wasn't moving at high speed by any means. But as we came closer and closer, this man still wasn't deciding. He would take a step forward, a step back. And then there's an impact. And this sleepy village was a little sleepy village we were passing through. Nobody else in sight except this old man. Whether it was the impact, whether it was the vibrations, the sound, I don't know. But suddenly this place is crowded. And what had happened was that the car hit the man, and then it got off course and it hit an auto rickshaw that was, you know, those three wheelers that was parked there, and it ricocheted and it hit the tree on the other side of the road. So it went like this, like this, like this. And meanwhile, the whole village turned out and we came to a standstill. The first question is, everyone okay? Daddy had hit her head against, you know, it was those ambassador seats, so it was like a bench. So she'd hit her head against there, but there wasn't any blood or anything, and we came out of the car, and she was a bit shaken, but that's it. And then I looked around for the driver, and I'm not seeing the driver anywhere. I asked Gopal Bhai, where's the driver? And he's also a bit spaced out, so he's not answering. And then I see this big, noisy gathering across the way. And instinctively, I knew that the driver was in the middle there. And how old was I? 24, 25, something like that. And I probably looked younger than that. And I just marched in. And whether they were so shocked seeing a young woman in a white sari or whatever, or Baba, something happened, and they parted to let me go through. And I arrived in front of this man, and they were about to start beating him up. He would probably be killed by these guys. It was just men, no women around. And they were making statements like, you rich people come into our cities and into our villages, and you don't care about human life and things like this. And I'm standing in front of this man. I just find myself right in front of him with my arms out. And I'm saying, wait, wait, the police are coming. Now, I have no idea that the police are coming, but something made me say that. And that's all I had to do. Just wait, wait, and Baba's power at that moment. And they all became silent and they backed away. And magic, the police did come. It just needed that space of buying time for a short time. They took the man away, and afterwards I understand that the old man, actually the ambulance had come, but he had died. And so at that moment, okay, so the old man, and it wasn't the driver's fault at all. He was one of the paid drivers. We didn't have our own cars in those days, not a single car. So good economical sense, but anyway, so this paid driver was driving us, and so I think probably that intervention saved this man's life. And then, of course, when it was discussed and everything, they were letting him go, but that took however long it took. And by then, Gopal Bhai had arranged for another car to take us back to Delhi. So, yes. When it's time to do something, Baba makes you do it. It's not your logic or your sense that's helping you at that moment, which is why I'm very aware that as things get more difficult and more challenging, the more we're connected with Baba, Baba will touch us and guide us in terms of what we need to do for ourselves and also for others.
It's like a real story of Shiv Shakti. I remember in this book, do you remember the book, Something Beyond Greatness? And there's this story of someone who was on the platform. I think, as far as I remember, it was the New York, I guess they call it the Metro. And someone fell, and there was a father who was with his daughters, and the train was coming. So he jumped onto the line and sort of lay over this other guy. Do you remember this story? And then train kind of went over them. And the first comment that he made was, just tell my daughters I'm okay. And, you know, and I remember going to ask, I think it was Manda who was relating this story many years ago in, like on a Sunday morning or something. And I remember going to Baba's room and I said, Baba, I really don't think I'd be able to do that. And Baba says, you won't need to, but you do have to change. But, you know, these are, you know, it's almost like in that moment, there's something else that takes over, isn't it? Which is, you know, what your story is about too. I don't know, what is that thing that takes over at that moment in time?
For me, at that moment, it was Baba. And for this other person, I think it might have been compassion. Maybe it was God. Maybe he was really deeply connected with God. It's possible. But otherwise, even it's things like this that show you that just as peace is the intrinsic quality of the human spirit, in the same way, compassion is also an intrinsic quality of the human spirit, where you don't stop to think about yourself. You're thinking about others. And that compassion gives you the courage to do things that normally you wouldn't imagine were possible.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of stories of souls like mothers who, you know, they see their children, their child in the road, and they suddenly make this quantum leap or something, you know, in little time. It's like time, in a way, that's another example of time stretching.
Yeah.
And, you know, have you got an example of time stretching?
About that?
Yes.
This is a story from the 60s, and it's a story about Indra. Indra was the one who was supporting Daddy in service in Pune, and when Daddy would be out of action, she would be the one reading the Murali. And she came to London a couple of times and spent a few months here with us in Baba Bhavan and Global House both times. So at that time, her child was around 3 or 4 years old. And they lived in this building, which was across the road from where the center was at that time. And I've seen that house, I've been in that. It's actually a place where Mama stayed. Mama stayed in that apartment there, because that's also, on one floor was Indra Ben's flat, and it was either the same floor, the next floor, but Dada Govind's flat. You know Dada Govind? You've heard of him?
Yeah.
Okay. Mama came to stay there, so lucky place. The children are downstairs playing, and there's not much space between where the building finishes and the fence comes and the road begins. Just very little space. But the children are playing downstairs in that little passage that's there, the courtyard. And suddenly she hears this big scream and instinct or whatever. And she runs down the stairs, and what she sees is incredible. She's seeing her child, this little boy, and he's stretched out to get a ball across from the fence, and the fence had spikes, you know, iron metal spikes. And because he's done this, one of the spikes has gone right into his throat, and it's bleeding. And she stays Om Shanti, cool, but acts. She moves across, all the other kids are screaming, but she moves across and she pulls the child out. And by then, somebody is called an ambulance, and so the child gets taken to hospital. But her immediate understanding of the situation, nobody had the time to explain it to her, but she saw and she knew what she had to do. She pulled the child out. And the child was saved and is still alive today. So when you mentioned mother's instinct, and of course she herself was a yogi, but that state of detachment and yet engagement, you know, where if you're detached, or it doesn't matter, drama, whatever. No, not detachment in that sense. Detachment in the sense of being completely cool. Because if it was just attachment as a mother, she'd just be standing there crying, what's going to happen, what's going to happen? She's very cool, very detached, but she knew what she had to do. And she managed to pull the child out and saved his life, definitely saved his life. So
amazing story. So maybe another story. Have you got a story about when it's time to, you knew it's time to let go and start over?
When I, again, a story about India and London, I'd surrendered in, spoken to Baba in June 68, October 68, I'd surrendered and Baba sent me with Didi and Didi settled me in Agra. And then I came back to Madhuban for the Kumaris, the first Kumaris training. And the first part of the Karma Yoga I'd missed because they'd already planned lectures in Agra. So Dadi Kumarika had given permission that I could come in May when it was time for Dadi Janki and Jagdish Pai to run that part of the training. And that was just an amazing training. But again, there it was Avyakt Baba's intervention. Dadi was saying, go to London. And again, even at that time in 1969, I was saying no. And then Baba said, Baba's sending you not for karmic accounts. Baba's sending you for service. And I knew it was time to let go and just accept it. And so then that period of, I'd been in India by then since December 67. So I'd already been there in India for about a year and a half. And now Baba was saying, I don't want you to stay in India where it's all comfortable and you get ready-made platforms and centers are really nice and everything is ready-made. But Baba wants you to go where there's no center, where there's no support on the external level. And I had to let go. No question of saying to Baba, Baba, I'm scared. You can't say that to Baba. Baba's telling you to go. And Baba's saying, Baba will be with you. So then you just have to let go and say, okay, whatever comes, let me see. So that was a big moment of letting go.
Thank you. I think I've got, we got time for maybe one more story. I like stories, as we know. I think there's sometimes we, in these powers, there's a time to tolerate and then there's a time when you have to face. And I don't know if you've got a little personal story that reveals when, you know, when you had maybe tolerated and then you thought, no, I've got to face now.
Yes. There was a situation in which I was working very closely with an individual and Dadi was here in London with us and this person became very attached to me. But because of that attachment, there was also this anger. Both things go together in the sense that if I wasn't able to give that individual enough time, and it was service, it wasn't personal in any way, it was service, but it meant that I personally had to give time. And it would be hours of discussion and getting things sorted out and then moving on. And that soul was excellent, a really good soul. But her anger became worse and worse and worse. And sometimes it would be anger at somebody else, sometimes it would be anger at myself. And I thought to myself, you know, how much longer do I have to tolerate this? And Dadi said to me something very interesting. She said that, you know, this soul makes such good effort. This soul could become one of the eight, but she has to deal with her anger. And so just remember, see all her good qualities. And there were plenty of good qualities and Baba's love and faithfulness and loyalty and all of that. But yet the anger and sometimes out of that possessiveness and attachment, but other times it's just explosions. And so Dadi was teaching me to tolerate. Don't take it hard. Don't be hard on her. Just take it as part of the scene of drama of learning tolerance. and a very interesting scene when we'd gone to Madhuban together, because there were not hundreds at that time. It was still only a handful that would go. So we were together in Madhuban, but there was mutual agreement, non-verbal. We didn't say it to each other, that she would continue with her own effort, and she loved Madhuban and had lots of friends in Madhuban, and I would do my own thing. And you know where the dispensary is, and you come out of that passage. It's still quite small. You come out of that alleyway, and then you come into the courtyard. And so I happened to be in the courtyard, and I was about to turn into that alleyway, and she came. And we met each other after a few days. And so she gave me this big smile, which was a good sign. And then she says, "I think Baba sent me to you to make you karmatit." And we both just laughed because she must have been reflecting on her own behavior. Mm. You have to tolerate. It's okay. And like you said earlier, there comes a moment, a time when things just dissolve. And so according to drama, when we came back to London, I think maybe drama waits till you've learned your lesson. By the time we came back to London, there was a whole new team that was ready to work with her. And I was now working with other people rather than with her directly. And it was like that phase finished. And so tolerance is something that you're tested on. But there comes a moment when, if you've tolerated enough with the right attitude, not sort of gritting your teeth and saying, "Oh, I suppose I have to tolerate it," but really with a big heart, a generous heart, and I had Daddy as my mentor, so it was easy. But the account gets settled and finished, and drama takes another turn.
Thank you. So it's now nearly 8:30. So probably we should just end with a few moments of quietness. And thank you for all your lovely stories, because I think often when knowledge is integrated in stories, we remember it. You remember the principles. So thank you very much.
Thank you for all the great questions. Yeah. Very good questions.
Yeah. Okay.